Hello, everybody. Welcome to another episode of the Motor City Adventures Podcast, episode 76 here at the TigersMLReport.com. I am Rogelio Castillo. Alongside is Chris Brown and Youper. And you can find us on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, where you're ever listening to podcasts, as I am stumbling through my speech here. And if you're going to be betting, because March Madness is coming up, of course, and that is time to double your paycheck. And I'm not encouraging you to do that. I'm just totally reading the copy here. I'm just joking. BetOnline continues to be the number one source for all basketball wagering needs, including pro and college hoops throughout the year. And I'm sure when the USFL starts dropping, they'll have some lines for that. With up-to-minute odds, stats, and trends, you can follow your favorite team's path down to the playoffs or March Madness with live in-betting contests and all of the best player props. Experience the world's best wagering platform anytime from your desktop or your mobile device. Head to BetOnline today and be part of the team and use our promo code BELIEVE for your 50% welcome bonus on your first deposit. BetOnline, the game starts here. All right. So that being said, gentlemen, how you guys doing?
Not bad.
Very, very good. All right. Excited to get going.
Yeah, plenty to get to this evening. I do want to talk about the Dylan Cease trade that happened yesterday because it does affect the Tigers. It was a guy who was going to probably potentially more likely start opening day, but in all reality, we kind of knew that wasn't going to happen. We're going to talk about Jackson Joe, who, by the way, I was looking at her video. Thanks for everybody checking it out. We got over 1,000 views there, Chris.
Did that come out as a podcast, or was it just a video? Because it was very visual.
It was very visual, so yeah. I haven't put it on a podcast. I haven't
That's fine. I just was making sure that my feed wasn't messed up.
Oh, no, I still have to edit part where it sounds more like a video thing, but.
Yeah, it doesn't necessarily have to go on the podcast. I was just curious. Fun week. Lots of good pitching lately. Up until late yesterday against the Phillies. I think they were tossing a one hitter again until Will Vest had some trouble, and I think maybe today as well against the Yankees.
Yeah, the Yankees, they took advantage of a very scarce Yankee squad. There's fighting injuries. That featured a lot of regulars, but nevertheless, you still like the encouragement of Casey Mize's performance today. We'll get to that. We'll get to the recent cuts too, as well, is now down to, I believe, 40 players are left in camp. And there was recent cuts as of this morning. We'll talk about that as Justin Henry Molloy continues to have the good fight. But again, that could be also what you mentioned earlier, Chris, on that. Yeah. So,
holy Stan, cow.
Yeah. Thank you, Stan. You're too kind. Thank you,
Stan. Oh, Stan. Thank you.
Well, I think we know what Stan just earned.
Yeah.
Excuse it.
And
off the Frickers building.
I know he's more of a fan of this one.
Exquisite.
But he gets a double shot of that. Thank you, Stan.
Speaking of which, got to hear Dan Hastie call the game today.
Yes.
It was nice. It's always good to hear Dan on the radio calling Tigers game with Bobby Scales.
That was really good.
Did a good job.
We got to hear his
exquisite
voice. So
yes. That was nice to see. We've had a fair amount of games televised or streaming lately, and today wasn't, but at least got a good radio broadcast out of it.
Yes, we did. And it was funny because I posted the clip of the home run of Kerry Carpenter, but I just used a picture for the Tiger Mother Report. I just used Dan's audio because I'm so used to I can't pull any video, so
no.
You have to improvise. But if you're watching us live online, thank you so much for watching us. But yeah, there is, in terms of, I want to start with the Dylan Cease trade, because there was a couple guys that were involved on the trade on the way back that I wanted to discuss, because two of them I have seen pitch. And it was also for the fact that I did write something for the Chicago White Sox Southside blog, because I thought it was an interesting trade, and I'm contributing a little more on other sites to not just Tigers, but just always the White Sox are a fascinating bunch to me, because based off how Jerry Reinsdorf runs this organization, the guy is really
what an asshole.
Yeah, and it's indicating on this trade, but the three arms that he got back. So Drew Thorpe, who just came over from the Yankees, and I saw him pitch last year for Somerset against Erie. This guy's got some really nasty stuff. Fastball sits at 92, 93, but the way he delivers kind of like a high three quarters angle, really, I don't know. I really liked his makeup. Good slider, plus slider. And he's got a good changeup too. And one guy you saw last year, Chris, and you remember this before I did, was, I cannot say his name.
Jairo Uriarte.
Thank you.
He was Fort Wayne's opening day starter, I guess, first game starter at West Michigan's opening day last year, which we went to. And it was, and I wrote a kind of in-person notes from that game on the Tigers Minor League Report website. And I actually had him first overall because I thought he was the most impressive player there. And he only pitched three innings because it was the first start of the year, but he basically carved up West Michigan for the first couple innings. And that was, I was a little concerned. Again, that was the first game of the year, and I was watching, Jace Young swing right through these fastballs. I'm like, I don't know. But Jace Young seems to have rectified that particular issue. But yeah, Uriarte, it was a mid-90s fastball. Like I said, it was a very cold day. And a really good looking changeup that had guys out in front, and the slider showed a lot of promise too. And he was athletic off the mound. And I was just, I was really impressed. He ran into some control issues, I think, once he moved up to double A. And I do wonder if there's a little like more relief risk there, but it's a really nice arm and a good three pitch mix. And I thought that was a really strong top two to get in this deal.
Yeah, there's a little bit of relief risk there because he does have some command issues where it tends to have a little high walk per nine. And what I like about him too is like he has gained a little bit of weight, so it's not that it says he's listed at 180, but there's no way no. He's and luckily we have some video of him pitching here, and it's one of those things where you look at him and look at his makeup, and he could be. It depends on how the White Sox want to use him, but right now the White Sox starter depth right now in their system has been kind of limited. If there was an interesting stat line too, is that last year, start to the beginning of the 2023 season, the White Sox are ranked right now, according to MLB Pipeline, 20th among systems. Of the 30 that they have now, 17 players came over from a different organization.
Yeah, I mean, they've traded everything. I thought, why stop here? Why not just trade Luis Robert too to San Diego and get Jackson Merrill out of it? But, they broomed out Williams and what's his name? Right, I'm sorry, I'm blanking on his name. The Rick Hahn.
Rick Hahn, yeah.
But then didn't they put Chris Getz in charge? And he was previously their head of scouting, I think. So it wasn't a total. Cleaning of house, but they've done a pretty good job acquiring, mid to upper level talent. And yeah, I mean, I think Uriarte has a higher ceiling than Thorpe, I guess. Thorpe is might have the higher floor. And then they got Zavala, who was a really intriguing outfield prospect. And then another player too, Steven Wilson, I think his name is. So, Dylan Cease. Dylan Cease is a very good pitcher. Tigers fans don't need to be told that. He absolutely dominated the Tigers for a couple of years. And I'm a believer. And then when you can go and get a quality to good all-star level big leaguer, you do it. And so I think that's a good job by the Padres there. But at the same time, for the White Sox, he was just kind of wasting away there. That's looks like the worst team in the American League right now. If you're going to be lousy, you might as well cash in when you can. So I think they did pretty well too.
For the ugly later, I was going to, we can talk about it now because we kind of jumped into this, not a problem. But I was looking at the White Sox roster, right? If you go up and down that roster, tell me a player who would start for the Tigers. I mean, I think about that. It's Luis Robert.
Yeah.
Okay. And if you want to take a chance on Garrett Crochet, even though he's never done much, he's more a great idea than an actual something you can count on. The Tigers, I mean, just top to bottom, are a better organization right now. And I was really surprised that with all the club control, Dylan Cease, that they didn't get one guy a little higher ranked. And for what those rankings are worth, we all know that, that can be, subjective. But you look at one ranking, they had all three of those guys from the Padres were in their top 10, but none were in their top five. Mm-hmm. You know, and you think, man, Dylan Cease almost won a Cy Young 2 years ago. He's got wicked stuff, 200 strikeouts, all that club control. And, you know, they got, like say, like you're saying, they have nice players they got back. I mean, but I just, if I was a White Sox fan, I'd be a little disappointed.
Yeah, well, that's, I mean, the Padres, they've done a phenomenal job, you know, building up their farm system, considering all the talent they traded away. You know, this is a team that had, not that long ago, they had C.J. Abrams and James Wood and Robert Gasser. And who else? I'm forgetting probably another dozen really solid prospects that they traded away. And to still have that level of talent where, yeah, they've got Ethan Salas, who's probably a top 10 prospect in baseball. They've got Jackson Merrill, who looks like he's going to be their starting center fielder. And then they have Robbie Snelling, who was, I don't know if he was the best pitcher in minor league baseball last year, but he was one of the three best. And that's not to mention Dylan Lesko, who I think is just kind of coming back now after having Tommy John surgery. So they've done a great job.
And you know who's responsible for a lot of those guys, right?
Well, yeah, Mark Carner was there for some of it. Yeah, he was there for not the last two drafts, right? But that James Wood, Jackson Merrill, Robert Gasser draft, that was pretty monstrous. And and didn't they also get Cole Wilcox in that deal, I think, or that draft? Yeah, or that may have been the year before. But yeah, they've drafted and developed really well.
You know what's even scarier is that they have Homer Bush Jr.
Who they just got last year? Yeah. Yeah, well, I remember, you know, he's tooled up. It's a question about whether or not he's going to hit. I think he was on Grand Canyon with Jacob Wilson, I believe, last year.
But yes, he was. Yeah. But the other guy, too, that I liked in their system that's a little lower ranked is Nathan Martorella, who is a left-handed stick who can play the outfield in first base. And it's just like, it's kind of like even they're even out just outside their top 25 or top 10, rather. I mean, a guy like, the reason why they can do this is, I mean, here's a guy who they got from the Yankees, Randy Vasquez, who the Yankees signed for $18,000. $18,000.
Wow.
And it's ridiculous.
No, I remember that was Randy Vasquez was the guy that James Chipman had just gotten his the stalker radar gun that we have now, or that Raj has now. I borrow it from Raj. It's Raj's.
It's a wee.
Well, but you know, I didn't pay for it. But he was just, James knew that spin rate was like, you know, this thing, but he didn't really know what to, you know, what was good, what was bad or whatever. And Randy Vasquez was like a 3,200 RPM curveball. And he's like, is this legit? Is that good? Like, oh my God, that's nuts. And he found him. That was like, you know, FCL games or whatever. I don't know. We don't need to talk too much about the Padres farm system, but again, like Martorella we saw and Jacob Marcy we saw, and he was like the toast of the AFL. They've just done a great job, and that allows you to make trades like this. It's kind of what we see with the Dodgers all the time, right? Where they build such good farm systems that they can trade prospects 4 through 8 and not feel it at all. I think you're right. I think other GMs may have said, no, we're not doing this without one of those top three. I think there were rumors that the Yankees were sniffing around Cease and that they didn't want to part with, and now I'm blanking on his name, the big center fielder who looks monstrous.
Dominguez?
No, there's the he's the taller one. He was from Vanderbilt.
Oh, Stephen Jones?
It's Jones. I forgot.
Oh, so you're talking Spencer Jones?
Spencer Jones. Yes. He looks like he's going to be really good, and so the Yankees didn't want to part with him, and the Padres are like, all right, we'll sneak in there and good for them. But yes, I don't know who starting for the White Sox on opening day. They have who's it? Eric Fetty, the Crochet back in the rotation. Chris Flexen, is it Chris Flexen? Yeah. Somebody Flexen.
Yeah, Flexen.
He's Flexen.
And but they put
Kulak in the bullpen.
Well, Corey.
Yeah,
Corey,
yeah, he's not happy about that either.
Corey in the chat says they think this is going to re-sign Mike Clevenger, who I totally forgot.
Well, there's a positive clubhouse presence.
Yeah. I totally forgot he was still a thing. Like, it's just because I haven't heard his name in a while.
Trevor Bauer wasn't available, so they get Clevenger. Yeah. Actually, Trevor Bauer's very available.
Yes. Yes, that continues.
Yeah, that's such a weird saga. But at any rate, yeah, it's going to – the White Sox rotation is going to be a dumpster fire of trial and error. And
– oh, yeah. Soroka. Mike Soroka is trying to, you know, on the comeback trail. That's so one guy that I wouldn't wouldn't mind if he, you know, turned it around just because I feel bad for him. But
yeah,
other than that, yeah, it's kind of ugly.
I did see the Yankees are sniffing around Michael Lorenzen now.
I saw that too, and I honestly I'd forgotten that he was still out there. It's kind of a bummer, you know. He was so solid for the Tigers, and you know, threw that no hitter with the Phillies. I know he didn't finish the season that great, but I thought somebody would sign him to a solid like one year, $10 million deal.
Yeah. So Stan puts the rotation in or chat, and it just sounds like a list of Fetty, Soroka, Flexen, Crochet, and Nastrini. Sounds like a law firm of some sort, but
it looks like a 55 win team.
Yeah, exactly. Let's get back to Tigers here. As early in the week, though, we did a video. We did an entire video you can find on Tiger Miley Report on Jackson Jobes. Well, it was just one inning of work. I understand it was just against really a bunch of guys that you won't see on an open day lineup, but he went out there and was throwing gas 101, 102. And Hinch talked about that they're not even sure if he's going to pitch for the rest of the spring. Correct? That's what I
think. Yeah. Yeah. They said they might find a spot for him. I'm sure they've got it planned out, to the second.
So somebody want to know what my shirt says. It says Latinos against spooky shit.
Uh-huh. Yeah. Those are spookies.
Those are spookies. Yeah. There's a fun TikTok guy out there who does a fantastic job. Big fan of the show. Continue.
Yeah. I know that they. You know, the main thing this year is I don't know, it's like an interesting puzzle challenge for them is how to keep Jackson Jobes' arm from exploding while getting him enough innings to have him be ready for next year. Because what we saw was the best stuff in the organization, like top five, top 10 stuff on the planet right now. it's tough because I don't know. In like as you said, those were three guys who just aren't ready for that level of stuff. But big leaguers, real big leaguers, would be. I mean, he'd still get them out with command of that sweeper and those changeups and that cutter and that fastball. But you make a mistake, it's not going to bother Freddie Freeman and Mookie Betts and Rafael Devers and those guys, right? Like they're the best in the world. So, even if he came up this year, he'd probably still struggle. I think to mid four, low five ERA at the most. But they just got to figure out a way to get him innings and keep him healthy, because that's the key, is you want him starting every fifth day next year, really.
Well, I'll tell you, it was as exciting as three batters faced can get at the end of a spring training game that otherwise you'd be snoozing through, right? It was really, really something to see. I just wonder, at some point, is he a multi-inning reliever this year? Or is he going to just start the whole way? Because you think back to how the Orioles back in the day with Earl Weaver, he broke guys in and coming up to the majors and throwing long relief and then slowly worked them into being a starting rotation pitcher. Now, I don't know if that's totally out of favor and there's no chance of that or not, but it just does seem like, having him get a lot of outs at Erie this year doesn't make a lot of sense if his stuff keeps looking that good.
I mean, yeah, that's the main thing. It feels wasteful to the point of negligence to do that almost. And we have no problem with teams taking care of the minor leagues, right? Like, hey, we'll send the prospects there. But yeah, when it's a pitcher and the stuff is that crazy, we talked about it before. If this is Jim Leland and Dave Dombrowski and it's 2011, Jackson Jobes coming north. He's the fifth in the rotation on opening day. They'll figure it out. But that's just not the way they're doing things now. And we saw it all last year, the way that they kind of had guys ramp up throughout the course of the season. And it was four innings max, 60 pitches, I think, in April, then five innings in May. And then after that, the governor was off a little bit. They didn't often give guys the seventh inning. But so I could see them just giving Job those April and May starts down in the minors, maybe four or five in Erie, four or five in Toledo. And then at that point, you're at like 40 innings, I think. And then you could make it work where he's starting. He's basically starting on 5 days rest, maybe use the shuttle to Toledo, like are the All-Star breaks coming up. So you skip two of his starts and things like that. Give him a little break and get him up to the 120, 130th innings that we think he needs. It's just, I ultimately think it's going to come down to how competitive the Tigers are. If they're pushing for the division, I don't know if they're going to want, and the starting pitching is doing well. I don't think they would want to mess with it, honestly. If they're out of it, everybody's going to be disappointed, but that might give them more reason to bring Job up and let him get the knock the rust off, if you will, or, you know, get his whoopings before next year.
The Tigers pitching laboratory continues to be, like, we talked about this on Jackson Job video, that whatever you had to pay Robin Lung, pay him, like, give him a small portion of the franchise, whatever has to get done for these changes to happen. But this is something, you look at this point last year, Job was even pitching. Job was recovering from an injury at this point. And it was a totally 100%. No one knew. Everybody was already, the pitchforks were out. It was just basically, look, Jackson Job sucks, blah, blah, blah. You know, he's not going to pitch this year. It was that vibe that he might not even pitch at this time last year.
Yeah.
As I recall.
It was.
This year, I mean, he went out there and shoved impressively. And that's where, you know, you're right. You don't want, what was the term used? You don't want to waste the bullets, Chris? Is that what we used the other night?
Yeah. I mean, I didn't invent that by any means or whatever. But yeah, that's like, you just feel like pitchers, any pitch could be our next arm injury, right? And like, you hate thinking that way, but you see it so often.
Right.
That it feels like a waste when you've got a guy throwing that well down in the minors when he could be helping the big league club. But there's more considerations than just this year. Unfortunately, that's part of the job for a general manager, I think.
Oh, by the way, thank you so much,
Samuel. Thank you.
Thank you, Samuel.
For the $10 Canadian dollars there.
Attending.
Off the Frickers building.
Exquisite.
And also, by the way,
aren't you heading up to Canada soon?
Yes, I am. I'm actually heading to Toronto in June. So I'll be up in, or actually it's Milton, Ontario, which is, I guess, outside of Toronto. I'll be in Toronto for June for work coming up. So, by the way, for everybody who is watching us this evening on the podcast, and also if you're listening at home, we haven't done this. I had a friend of mine from the show give us a bobblehead. So I have a couple bobbleheads to give away. Well, one, actually. There's one. There's a U of M one, but no one would be interested in that. But anyway. A Venezuela, Miguel Cabrera bobblehead will be yours. And yeah, I'll be giving away randomly to a listener this evening. So if you're interested, actually, you know what? We'll do a contest tonight. Basically this, the best inside the number you give us tonight will win this. Okay. So anybody with the really good inside the number will vote between the three of us and you'll get a Miguel Cabrera Team Venezuela bobblehead.
Nice. So,
All right. So this will be, but this will be for more for the YouTube fans. For the people listening at home, I'll figure something out else. But anyway. All right. Anyway. But yeah, there was a big buzz. And again, it's one inning of work, but you came away just going, even like AJ Hinch knew what he was doing. He was playing up to the camera. Like, you know, he knew what he was doing. It was just like, they have a shot of him just like looking straight ahead like, what? It's crazy.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So if you had to put odds on it, Memorial Day weekend, Jackson Job is a Tiger. What do you think?
I'd say 20%. I don't even know if that's 1 in 5 or whatever. My math and odds aren't great, but I still think it's unlikely. As much as we might want it, I think based on what we know so far from Scott Harris and AJ Hinch, they probably have something else they want him to work on too.
Yeah. Well, Justin Henry Molloy can talk to him about hoping for a call up and never coming off. So.
Yeah. Well, that's what we were saying earlier. You know, he is the lone prospect, I believe, who is not on the 40-man roster, who is still among those 40 players left in camp. There are other guys who aren't on the 40-man roster who are in camp, like Drew Anderson and Ryan Vallade and other guys like that. But and I think, as I was saying to Relio, that I think that's almost like a nod to his seniority, if you will. Like, they sent Bigby down and Young down because they have less time in AAA. And so I think they're keeping him up just as kind of like, hey, we see you. We acknowledge you. You're not making the team, but we'll keep you up here for longer because you're basically part of the team.
I look at, you know what? Stan makes a good point here. 100% September call-up looking for 2025 Rookie of the Year award. I look at it this way. If they are in contention, this is my prediction. I'm going to do a stand here because if you put them in Erie's rotation, there's a chance that Erie may repeat. And I'm not just saying that because, you know, just to be partial to minor leagues, that rotation has a potential. Like if it is what we think it might be from what we hear, that is going to be a sick rotation. It really depends on who else is coming back in the Eastern League. But that being said, though, still, you put Jackson Jobe down there along with got maybe another year from Brant Hurdler if he doesn't start the season in Toledo. And you have yourself, and then maybe perhaps even like, there's even guys in high A right now that we're not even considering that could elevate themselves. That we're seeing that they're not being thrown in the fields right now. They're in the backfields right now. So
go ahead. Yep.
I was just going to say, I think my hope is that if he is humming along early and they are in contention in June, I would think that if he's one of their 10 best pitchers, they got to bring him up. They got to find a role for him. If they want to put a winning club and challenge for a division title, if he's one of your best, you got to do it. I'm hopeful it's as high as a 1-in-3 chance we see him early in the summer.
I mean, one of the other things, and I almost use this as my good, and it's kind of piggybacking off of Rogelio's point, was the Toledo roster this year might be, like, I joke that they might be better than the 2003 Tigers. based on, again, we're talking about who we still think one of the big three, one of Mize, Manning, or Olsen may begin down in Toledo, despite the fact that all three of them are pitching pretty well. They're pitching effectively. I don't think they're going to piggyback, and I don't think they're running a six-man rotation. So somebody's going down, I think. And then you've got Gibson Long, you got Montero, you got Flores, you got possibly Fieto if he doesn't make the bullpen. If he does, then maybe Vest is down there. You've got Herter. You've got Job. All these guys who could be up in Toledo. And then the offense, you have Dylan Dingler as a catcher. You got Hurt Hira as first base possibly. Second base could be Eddie's Leonard. Shortstop is Kreidler. Third base is Young. You got the outfield of Badu and Bigby and Malloy. That's a lot of talent for a AAA team. And again, like with all that pitching depth, do they piggyback? It's possible. Yeah. Do they piggyback or like, you know, leapfrog is what I want to say. Would Job leapfrog over all those guys? I mean, you could argue it based on the arm talent, but, I don't know if that's the way they'd like to do it in given right. Their 40-man roster crunch, which we talked about last week, I think.
Or as a possibility, and I'm going to play devil's advocate, they trade an arm to get a bat. Because, I mean, you can all get the offense today. The Tigers won 7-0 over the, you know, they were able to get the Marcus Stroman pretty quickly. And I understand they were playing a team that was kind of, again, beset by injuries. But you're still – look, I'm still not convinced. They still need another bat in order to put them over the top in the division. I'm sorry. There's a couple lulls in the offense where if they face a really good pitching where I just don't see them overcoming that. You can benchmark a good year from Riley Green. I'm still concerned about some Spencer Torkelson struggles a little bit. I mean, if we're – okay, again, spring – stats don't matter. You're right. We know this. We was something we have established. Everyone knows that, right? That be that as it may, though, you're expecting at some point to show some signs of at least like, hey, you know what? He hit the ball really hard. He's been striking the ball a little bit, but that's the thing. You're not seeing that at all. I mean, he's batting 115, and he still hasn't had a home run this spring.
Yeah, you know, I think that I don't remember if it was Yup, if that was one of your was that your good, your bad, your
yeah, we'll get to that. Yeah,
the yeah, but I don't even to me, Spencer Torkelson has never had a good spring. you know, you had the first year was brutal. Yeah. And then last year was, or was it the second spring? The first one was 22. I don't know. It's not been great for him. I'm not too concerned, but no, I agree. I mean, we talked about it when they signed Flaherty and Maeda. That like, yeah, it's, you know, okay, they can trade an arm now, but they have to do it if they're going to do it. Like, we haven't seen them do it, and there's not really an indication that they're going to. And their team's looking for arms right now, as we've seen. The Yankees could still use an arm, but doesn't seem to be. I don't know. We haven't even heard whispers about the Tigers being involved in anything. Now, maybe that's just, you know, the way they work. Maybe suddenly you will wake up and it's, oh, Matt Manning's been traded to the Yankees for Jason Domingo. It's like, all right. But seems unlikely. I'm just saying. We'll see. But I'm not expecting it to happen. But I wouldn't be mad at it. I think you're right. I think the offense still is a batter too short.
Yeah. I mean, you know, you and I have been on that camp.
Yeah.
It's even like there's not even like, you know, you can look at, even with the likes of even, you know, like Cole Keith, for example. Cole Keith, he had another hit today. He's still showing some sort of like life, but it's just like when you don't see nothing, it is kind of pause for concern a little bit. So we'll see how that happens. Even with Gio Urshela at third base, I mean, I don't think that's a thing that's going to solve a lot of problems either.
No.
You know, what's interesting it seems like Hinch has been using, like, he's been bringing Andy Ibañez in later in games lately in spring training, I think in preparation for him in that role, getting used to coming, you know, sitting around for a while and then coming in and batting. But yeah, I mean, like right now, Andy Ibañez would be my opening day third baseman based on the way he's played in spring and he did it in the second half last year. But I'm not AJ Hinch, so.
Yeah, we'll have to see what happens here. Let's go. Go ahead.
I'm just not sure which arm brings back a starting bat. You know, I that's not a prospect. That's not a year away. You know, who's going to bring somebody that you could plug right into the lineup today? Obviously, Scuba could, but they're not moving him. Who would bring that guy? There's a lot of good pitchers, mm-hmm. but they're not those marquee names that are going to, you know, have a blockbuster trade built around them.
You're going to have a team that definitely needs pitching, like starting out. Like they're willing to give away a bat that maybe is. I mean, you look at, for example, the Mets. The Mets have a couple bats that are locked right now that could probably play. You know, you got to look at a system like that. You look at something along those lines, and perhaps if that's the case, if they decide to go that route. I thought the Tigers would make a trade the offseason. Maybe they were entertaining some. I don't know.
Right,
but based off the amount of pitching depth they had, and Stan makes a good point. Based off his performance, why is Gio a lock? Because he's,
maybe he's not. I think, you know, when they signed him, I thought like I thought there was a chance, small chance, he wouldn't even make the roster. But I don't think they're basing anything like that on his spring performance. I think they signed him based on, you know, what he's done the last few years. Now, if they're, you know, they're seeing it up close and personal and like, oh boy, this guy's not moving right, he's not swinging right, the you know, the bat speed is down, they might cut bait. But I think we talked about before, that feels like a Wilmer or a Wilson Ramos type of thing where they'll give him at least a couple months before they just kind of part ways. But again, also, yeah, there's no guarantee he makes a team if they have, you know, concerns there.
I just think that we've seen enough now in a small sample of Scott Harris's body of work, the patience is there. And I think they're going to be happy they have this on paper, this tremendous pitching depth. And yep. They're just going to see what the offense, how it comes together early in the season. I think if there's a trade brewing, it's more likely something in June or July where they'd make a move if they feel they need to upgrade the bats.
They use somebody like Flaherty, for example, if he's pitching well. And he did look well today. We'll get to him in a second. So now it's time for Inside the Numbers. All All right. So, Youper, kick off our inside the numbers.
My inside the number is 101.5. And that is the over under this year in Vegas for the Atlanta Braves and wins. Pretty aggressive over under to set it at 101.5. I thought that if I was in Vegas, I would load up on the under. As good as they are, that's a big, big ask to get to 102.60. Last year, they won 104. Well, let's think about this. They had like five or six guys hit 30 home runs. You know, they didn't have many things go wrong other than Max Fried, but they were able to overcome that. Now they have Fried back healthy, and they did add Chris Sale, who evidently looks good. But, you know, how much can you count on Chris Sale after what we've seen the last few years? Certainly, it's not a bad gamble for them to take, you know, a deep organization like that. They might as well take him and see if they get the superstar Chris Sale for a while. But I think that as much as I like the Braves and how I am impressed with that team, going over 101.5 would be too rich for my blood. I'd go under.
Yeah, I mean, all it takes a Ronald Acuna injury might be enough to knock them down to 100 wins, right? Yeah. or 99. And yeah, to your point, I mean, we were looking up barrels, second half barrels last year. Because Spencer Torkelson was among the leaders in that. I don't remember why we were looking, but it wasn't related to him. But then like four or five Braves were up there. It was, you know, Acuna and Riley and Olson. Like, it was like, God damn, Ed, that's just it's a barrel factory over there. So, but yeah, we've seen great teams fall short by 8-9 wins if they have a couple injuries at the wrong time. Or I remember there was a couple years back, maybe it's more than like a decade now, where I want to say that the Dodgers had run away with the division by like early August. And I think they lost like 14 games in a row or something. Yes, like that. I remember that. Yeah. They were fine. Just like, oh, you know, it's, you know, sometimes I think the Phillies are pretty good this year. I don't think the Braves are going to, you know, run away and take it all. But I don't know. Yeah. That'd be too rich for me. I don't gamble. So unless maybe I would with our sponsor, but I don't bet, but I'd bet online. Is that it?
Yeah. what's worse, the Red Wings that collapse right now in March or the Dodgers one? Ooh.
Boy, I don't whatever. I know that Dylan Larkin got paid, but apparently not enough because it seems like as soon as he got her, other people are blaming the jersey patch, which is silly to me, but I guess it coincides with this terrible losing streak. So what are you going to do?
All right, Chris, what is your inside the number?
So mine is 82.5. I guess that's 19 below Youp's. And that is the difference in miles per hour between Parker Meadows' two singles today. He started the game with a 109.8 mile per hour rocket for a single, which is the second hardest ball he's ever hit in, you know, tracked ball, in according to StatCast. And then his next at bat, it was a 27.3 mile per hour bunt. Nice. Then he moved to second on the throwing error because he puts tons of pressure because he's so fast. And so, yeah, second hardest hit ball and the slowest, softest ball hit by him. So I started on a trek to try to find how many times this has happened in a single game. How many times has one hitter had two singles in the same game that were at least 80 miles per hour apart. And unfortunately I have no numbers for you guys because I couldn't get the research done. It's hard to find that in the same game, but I've got about 75 players who've actually done it in their career. So it may have only happened in the same game one or two times, if ever.
Yeah.
Probably. But I thought it was kind of funny. So, yeah. Parker Meadows, fast and good.
All right. And that is you know what, Tyler's number is 28.6. And that is his K rate in spring training of 2023. His K rate was only 22.8 and only 19.8 in 2022. It was a good sign. I believe Jack is heading for a big season. And he's actually my inside number too, because his average right now, his fastball velocity in the game against Philly was 94.1. So my inside number is 94.2 during the game against the Philly. And it's been 94.4, 95.1 over his last two starts. So my inside number is 93.1, which was his fastball average last season with the Cardinals and the Orioles. So again, Tiger's Lab. Like, I have to have a sound effect of some sort. Yeah.
Or just the beginning of the Monster Mash with the bubbling.
Yeah, the bubbling sound. Yeah. We have to, yeah, or like something like, yeah, I'll think of something.
Dr. We could probably Jekyll, do Mr. Hyde music.
Yeah. At some point, we can do a parody of the Monster Mash with like working in the baseball lab late one night. No, and Jerry, if people can go find it, if they're on Twitter, Jerry has looked into not only Flaherty's velocity, but also his slider and how that seems to be improved too. So yeah, it's, I don't know. You don't want to get too overzealous, but it sure looks from the spring, the way everybody's throwing harder and better, that they've got something really nice cooking here. And the one thing we haven't really talked about in, you know, I guess you got to cross your fingers here, is they're remarkably healthy compared to these other teams we've seen around town, or not around town. Well, maybe around town too, but around baseball, you know, and I'm going to get into that in a little later, but there's some of these teams are dropping like flies.
Oh yeah.
Somebody suggested the Hulk piano. I think I might have the perfect sound effect. Yeah,
nice.
Let me see here. Are you guys familiar with that one?
That it was, it came through kind of chopped up.
All right, hold on. I'm
was it Transformer?
Yeah. It was the, hold on, let me see if I can play it again. I got to find a cleaner version of it, but it was essentially.
Yeah,
hold on.
Yeah, I mean, that is.
There you go.
That's not bad. They are transforming these guys into sort of man machine. Yeah, Man Machine by Kraftwerk.
Or even, you know, for that matter, we can actually see if I can do this one, actually. We're wasting way too much time on this, but I just wanted I want to get right real quick. It's one with top of mind. Let me see if this one works. There he goes. All right. I found a way to use Transformers, one of my other hobbies of my life. So yeah, that was my insider number. Let's see here. Bada bing, bada boom, his over under ERA 3.50. I'll go under. You know what? I'm gonna go over 3.65 or something to that effect. Stan's number, by the way, was Andy Baez's spring training OPS was over 1,000. So that's his inside number.
Andy Barrels.
And Barrels. He's got the barrels going. All right. So let's go into good, the bad, and the ugly. All right. Chris, what is your good, the bad, the ugly this week?
So I'm sticking with the Tigers for the good today, and it was is actually again about the top of the order today, and actually the top six hitters. It's kind of how you draw it up. You know, they're facing two legitimate big league arms in Marcus Stroman and Jonathan Loaisiga, however you pronounce his name. But yeah, Meadows, Green, Torque, Carpelson, Carpenter, Canna, and Keith combined. They went 8 for 15 with 2 doubles, a triple, a homer, and 3 walks, 5 runs scored, 5 RBIs. Now Torque didn't get a hit. But he did walk, and you can't expect that level of production every day. But if you're going to get 5 runs from those guys, you're going to win like 75-80% of those games. So that was nice to see finally some production there. So that was my good, because it was good to listen to. My bad is kind of twofold here, and it's generally under the umbrella of prospect heartbreak. I saw today, I don't know if it was today or yesterday, that Carter Kieboom, former top 20 overall prospect in baseball, one of the top prospects in the Washington National system, was given, you know, it was outright released, basically DFA'd, and nobody picked him up because he's struggled when he got to the majors. He was injured, and he just hasn't been good. He's you hate to say it, but he's a bust. And what's wild is I remember when he was a very highly touted prospect, and the Tigers, like, you know, the Tigers had, it was with their farm system was like Kristen Stewart and Isak Paredes. And I went on to like a national fantasy baseball podcast, and they were asking me about Isak Paredes. And I was like, yeah, you know, he could be like a poor man's Carter Kieboom. And here you are. Paredes has actually had the successful big league career, and Kieboom, you know, is going to be a triple A player, unfortunately. And the other side of that is Daniel Espino, who, you know, you talk about electric arms. He may have And he was a guy who was sitting 99, 101 miles an hour with his fastball with two outstanding breaking balls and a really good changeup. And then he blew out a shoulder last year. And people are always kind of worried about him. Shoulder went out last year, blew out a shoulder again this year. He's out for this year, too. Two straight years. One of the biggest arms in baseball. You have to wonder if he's ever going to throw a big league pitch. So that's bad, unfortunate. And my ugly is the whole J.D. Davis saga in San Francisco. Now, if people didn't follow that, there was a really nice article written about it by Andrew Baggerly, I think. I don't know if that's if he's San Francisco Chronicle or The Athletic or whatever, but essentially, you know, that they the Giants are a file and trial team like the Tigers are too with this arbitration system. And Davis was arbitration eligible this year, and they didn't give him an offer until like 30 minutes before he had to decide, and it was low, so he decided to go to arbitration, and he won. He won arbitration. An independent arbiter decided that his production was worth $6.9 million this year. And so that was like, all right, cool. I think the Giants were offering him like 6.4 or 6.3, something like that. You know, not a huge difference, but a difference that for whatever reason, teams care about this. And then the Giants go out and sign Matt Chapman, and they just outright release J.D. Davis. And everybody's like, oh, you know, somebody's going to pick him up. And then this story comes out that, no, there's a loophole in the CBA that if you are awarded the arbitration value rather than you agree to it, the team can then just cut you. Yeah. And they only owe you 30 days of termination pay. So
what an asshole.
Exactly. So J.D. Davis, instead of getting $6.9 million, is getting $1.1 million just because they signed somebody else. And, you know, I guess we see that in other sports fairly often. Not fairly often, but it seems like an NFL sort of thing that happens. You don't see it in baseball. And I don't know if this loophole has been around for a while and it's just a really rare case, but I can't believe the union let something like this happen. And it's the whole thing is ugly to me. And I can't imagine that it helps free agents heading to San Francisco, like, or, you know, any pre-arb guys. I wouldn't want to mess with that team. So I don't know. I just think it's a real bummer. Because J.D. Davis is a solid player. You know, he's not like a superstar, but worth $7 million, according to the arbiter.
Yeah, he's worth something. And it's crazy. We got some audio from Tony Clark.
What in the fuck are we doing here? Hell, I don't know.
Yep. Apparently not.
Well, you got to hope that he'll be able to find a gig somewhere and make up some chunk of that money, right? I mean,
yeah.
Can he sign for $4 million somewhere? I don't know.
I'm kind of surprised nobody signed him yet. I thought that he'd find a landing spot somewhere. I mean, maybe even back with the Mets. I know they have Brett Beatty and some other guys, but he wasn't particularly good last year. So, I don't know.
All right. Reaper, what is yours?
Well, we covered a couple of mine already, so I'm going to make a little change on the fly here. Good. I was looking a little today at the Guardians. And, you know, you always hate to rely on rookies, right? But if they come out with Bo Naylor and Chase DeLauder in their lineup this year, they might have a chance of putting together a more competitive offense than I was talking about a few weeks ago. DeLauder is a nice prospect. I mean, you follow him through his college days. I mean, that guy can hit. I think they're going to be able to put him in the outfield on opening day if they elect to. He's the kind of guy who I think could hit his way to fringe rookie of the year contention. The guy's just a nice stick. Bo Naylor showed a little bit last year when they called him up. I understand in Cleveland there's some talk whether or not he's going to be on the squad on opening day. I really think they ought to. I think they could, by maximizing the time with these young talents instead of the old, you know, some of the journeyman types that they sometimes run out there on offense, I think that'd be better for him. So we'll just have to see, but I'm really interested in watching Chase DeLauder this year. I'm sure he'll be up at some point if he's not on opening day. My bad, Torkelson hitting .115, seeing a lot of people getting a little bit agitated on Twitter. My thought there is, you know, it's meaningless, as we all know. We've seen him, as Chris mentioned earlier, he's gotten off to some slow spring starts. Even last year when he hit 30 home runs, he didn't look very good in April. He might just be that kind of player who takes some time to round into form. I would recommend that he ditches that, though, and gets a little better early in the season. But I'm not too worried about him. I think he's going to be fine. You know, the flip side is Carson Kelly is hitting 380. Nobody thinks he's turned his career around. You know, so that's how much spring training stats really matter. So hopefully as we get, as the time ticks down to opening day, Torkelson can get into some kind of groove and allay all the fears that some folks are having for him. Ugly. Let's go back to the White Sox. You know, I mentioned this earlier, but again, I was still stunned to go position by position and just think that, you know, unless Andrew Vaughn becomes a thing in year four, and if, you know, Yoan Moncada finds it again, there's not a player other than Luis Robert who I would put in the Tigers starting lineup, I don't think. That's just insane when you think about it. You know, given that the Tigers are a sub-500 team for the last few years, the White Sox are really in an ugly space right now. Again, I wasn't floored by the Cease return. I'm probably the low man on the totem pole among a lot of people I've even read, but that's fine. They're doing the right thing. They've got some bats percolating in the system. They added some pitching with this trade. On the lower levels, they're, you know, probably in the, going in the right direction, but boy, on the big league level, that could be a whole lot of ugliness this summer, which we'll enjoy.
Yeah. Well, and not to, you know, your Cleveland point was fun, and yeah, somebody mentioned Kyle Manzardo. I know Rogelio wrote a piece about people who might make my majors prospects, but yeah, other than, you know, I mentioned Daniel Espino, they lost their setup man Trevor Stephan to surgery, to Tommy John surgery, and Gavin Williams is going to start the season on the IL. So a lot of injuries there. So yeah, but I don't know, maybe the AL Central could need to. I view the Tigers as kind of the second best team there right now, but I do think Cleveland could shock if they get some of those bats, you know, up there in time.
Yeah, I think Manzardo has a really good swing. I love his swing. Watching him swing, he has a nice short, or his stroke is very kind of a classic throwback swing to it. And he's got some sticky power. He was fighting injury last year. I really like his bat a lot, and I hope he does get up there for making opening day, because I really think he has a good chance to make the roster. By the way, Tyler posted his good and bad. His good was Joey Wentz pitching well after mechanical changes. I put him also in the bullpen mix. I did an article on Motor City Bengals about him getting an opportunity in the bullpen. He's, I mean, despite the home run, people are still hate on Joey Wentz on Twitter too, which is,
anyway. He did have like a 6 ERA in 100 innings last year, but yeah, you true. Know.
Javi Baez is bad, which is, you know, makes sense. There's no excuse for him. You can't really hide that right now. And the ugly Red Sox signing Lucas Giolito just for him to possibly have TJ without even pitching for them. Well, I don't feel sorry for Boston, because Boston was been hesitant on spending money. So,
yeah. Did how many innings did Troy Percival throw for the Tigers? Do you remember?
I think less than.
It was. It wasn't. I was going to say like 12.
Yeah, I was going to say less than 20. Yeah. And then, unbelievable. Yeah. Yeah. He's going out to dinner with Mike Ilitch. Everybody's all happy. Oh, we're signing this big closer.
And nothing.
Oops.
And oops.
Yeah, and then
oops indeed. That was, yeah.
One bad year out of Joe Nathan, and then he got hurt. I'm looking. More than I thought. 26 games, 23 finishes, 20. 25 innings, 8 saves.
I was going to say 20 innings.
With a 5.76 ERA. He was probably hurt the entire time. Yeah, that's a risk you take when you sign free agent pitchers. Julio Teheran, 5 innings for the Tigers. Ivan Nova, you remember all this Alavila kind of bargain bin pitching? They all seem to get hurt.
Yeah, it's just the bargain bin never worked out. So the my good is the start today of the spring breakout games. So it was the Reds and the Rangers, and I believe it was Baltimore and the Pirates.
Yep.
Was the grapefruit action. So we got to see some likes of Rhett Lauder, who pitched 2 scoreless innings, and he was going, I mean, he was changing from 78 miles an hour to 95. Good looking pitcher. He's out there. He was the seventh pick last year in last year's draft. No walks, struck out 2 while facing 7 batters. And there's a good chance he might start the year in Double A. That's how good he is. And the Reds have really, I mean, right now they had the bad news earlier in the year, earlier in the week, that the one of their prospects, Nathan or
Nuelvi Marte.
Yeah, Marte is suspended due to drug abuse. He'll have a 60-game suspension. But Cam Collier hit a 2-run home run. That was the big blow for the offense-wise for the Reds. And then Paul Skeen striking out Jackson Holliday in the spring breakout game. That was a big highlight for that. The battle number one picks. And so that was, you know, it was cool to see those two marquee matchups pretty quickly. And the rest of the games, there's going to be, I think, the lion's share of the games are on Saturday. The Tigers games at 1 o'clock. We'll be doing a game cast. So if you want to watch along with us while we game cast, of course we can't stream it because we'll get in trouble. But if you want to watch us stream it live, we'll be putting up the link out till tomorrow. So, and also, there's been some, you know, seeing Jackson Holliday play second base too. And yeah, he might make the major league roster too, but at second base. Matt Moore.
That's a good one.
Yeah.
So my bad involves pitching injuries, and it is involving the Seattle Mariners and the fact that, like, they traded in the offseason. We've talked about the Braves earlier, Jared Kelenic. And then the guy to get back in return, Jackson Corar, has a right UCL tear, and he'll be gone for the year.
God, I didn't even hear that one.
Oh, you hear about that? No, yeah. He made two appearances, and then he gone.
Well, we didn't. I mean, you got Garrett Cole out for at least a month, if not two, if not more. Devin Williams out for a couple months with stress fractures in his back. It's like I was saying, man, the Tigers are remarkably healthy compared to the rest of these teams.
Yeah.
Fingers crossed.
Yeah, also, the break.
Yuri Perez has a – I'm sorry.
No, go ahead. Go ahead.
Yuri Perez has been having, I guess, this recurring fingernail split. No. Like last 2 years, the same fingernail keeps splitting on him. I don't know how you fix that.
Yeah, and it gets worse because then the other part of it, Cole Phillips, who the other pitcher who they got in the trade, is also going to be out for the year.
Oh,
he's going to need Tommy John surgery.
Well, yeah, I mean, and Alex Fiedo, I think, was having those fingernail issues, wasn't he? Then they had to basically change the grip of his changeup, I think, slider or something.
Yeah, you know, he changed his grip of his changeup. He was talking about that with Dan Petrie the other day, actually. He mentioned that he's changed the grip of his changeup. I'm sorry, go ahead.
I was just saying that's got to, you know, that's can't be that easy to like, oh, I'm just going to have to throw this pitch completely different way so I don't like, you know, hurt my fingernail.
Yeah, you probably want to make as few changes to Yuri Perez as possible if you're happy with how he's throwing it. You know, that's
yeah, absolutely.
Yeah. So, yeah, you lose a guy who's going to help you in your major league roster, but then you can lose a guy. Also can help your minor league roster. So right now, they could have been the ugly situation, but my ugly was the Garrett Cole situation in New York because they are in a very, very precarious right now. As Jay Jaffe put in his article, that's a good word. That's a good use of it. But you look at their rotation and the team is kind of literally just, this is the only guy who has had one of two pitchers that have at least 200 innings in the last two seasons, which is becoming more rare. It's a rare thing, but it's, yeah. I mean, you look at the rotation and the Yankees rotation after that, it's really, I mean, you're already asking Roldan and Nestor Cortez, who have had injury history, to be healthy.
Yeah.
Good luck.
And well, you know, interested in Michael Lorenzen, but how big is the fall off from Garrett Cole to Michael Lorenzen?
Yeah, your fifth starter is Clark Schmidt.
He's substantial, yeah.
I mean, you know, and then you lose. I mean, you, Servino's gone, Herman's gone. You traded Michael King, Rito Vasquez in the Soto deal. Your next guy up is Luke Weaver.
Ooh, you'd have to think that they might circle back around to Blake Snell or Jordan Montgomery. I mean, Jordan Montgomery had some history there. I'm sure they wouldn't mind that, but, you know, yeah, you know, who's sitting back and laughing is Scott Boras.
Yeah.
He waits it out and
crack his knuckles.
Oh, you guys want them or pay up?
Yeah.
So.
Yeah, I mean, and even like right now, you're looking at a guy like, here's two guys that we've seen recently: Clayton Beter, who they got from the Dodgers, and we saw him back at Great Lakes when they were doing that one inning experiment thing, which I still was kind of miffed about. And then you also have Will Warren, who saw pitch for Somerset. You remember that, right, Chris? He was pitched last year for Somerset.
Will Martin sounds familiar to me. Yeah.
Yeah. And then that's really, I mean, outside of that, it's a drop off after that. As Jay Jaffe mentioned to you, a guy by the name of Chase Hamilton, but you really have a lot of unqualified guys in the back end of the rotation. So you're screwed. If you're a Yankees fan right now, of course you're going to be whining because that's what's going to be typical of that. But,
yeah, I mean, Chase Hampton was a big name in the middle of the season. People were like, oh, man, this guy's really tearing it up. And I think he kind of, I don't know if he didn't fall apart, but it slowed down a little bit in the second half. But, yeah, that's not a guy you're not relying on a rookie, to come up and take over for Garrett Cole. I don't know. Who is it? Yeah, Deadly Injuries asked without Cole, who's the AL Cy Young favorite right now?
Yeah.
I would probably lean toward Corbin Burnes. He's in a walk year. He's done it before. Baltimore's pretty good at making guys better too. So it wouldn't shock me if he goes out and wins. But a couple injuries, you never know. The Seattle trio was pretty good.
Yeah,
Minnesota's
got to be pitches. Someone who rhymes with Merrick Newbel.
Yes, it could very well be Tarek Skubal. like I said, and that's when I go back to the Jackson Jobe thing. Man, it's like, Tarek Skubal is awesome. We think he could win the Cy Young legitimately this year. And everything Jackson Jobe threw was better than what Tarek Skubal throws.
Yeah.
oh, all right. Well, 3 miles an hour harder. Okay. That slider is better. That changeup. I mean, the changeup. Skubal's got a nasty changeup too. But it's funny to think about.
As Roger's having that conversation, I'm thinking maybe Kenta Maeda would look good in pinstripes. Maybe there is a trade there.
There you go. Or Jack Flaherty.
You would think they'd want a veteran.
Yeah. I would think so. But.
Yeah. There's going to be a cut up the room.
Well, who else? Isn't Shane Bieber kind of still out there?
Yes,
every Indian is attainable, I think.
Yeah.
So I haven't really been paying attention to him, but he was a name that seemed to be out in the market earlier. And, given that every other Cleveland pitcher seems to be breaking, maybe they'll just get rid of him before it's too late. But
and there he goes. I was waiting for somebody to say it. Stan said it first. Trade Matt Manning. It's gonna happen. That's a trope. That's becoming a trope to a certain extent. The trade Matt Manning. I kid you not. No one wants Matt Manning on his team. I feel like that is the case. But, you know what? You're right. Stan's saying, hey, Stan's saying basically, look, he has no velocity. You might be right. But
yeah, I haven't paid attention this year to see how he's doing, and he's certainly not the guy he was a couple years ago. But I don't know; it felt like he was still pretty effective last year. Am I crazy?
You know who's out there still? Domingo Germán still out there.
You know what? I wouldn't put it past the Yankees to reunite with that scumbag.
Yeah. Here's who's out there right now. This is according to FanGraphs. So you have currently right now, you have Mike Clevinger, you have Michael Lorenz, Julio Urias, Zach Greinke, not sure he's officially retired, Matt Boyd, Matthew Boyd's out there, Rich Hill at 44. And maybe the Yankees used to do this in the 80s. They used to sign Phil Negro, for Christ's sake. So they wouldn't. Dallas Keuchel. Madison Bumgarner, although he's retired, isn't he officially? Or
he's hunting somewhere.
Oh yeah, he doesn't like New York. He would never pitch in New York.
All these guys are available for a reason.
Yeah, Noah Syndergaard,
mm-hmm.
Johnny Cueto, Jake Odorizzi's still out there, and then you have Adam Polinko, or that guy's name is the Korean. Polinko? Yeah, who's out in the pitch in the Korean League?
I don't know. Trying to think of other kind of bad teams that might be willing to trade somebody, but I don't know.
Let's face it, the Yankees have no excuse with their revenue not to bring in one of the big names, Montgomery or Snell. at the very least, Michael Lorenzen. That should be like pocket change. Let's do that tomorrow, because these other guys are going to take some time to get ramped up.
Yeah. No, I think that's a good point. Yeah, it's that they're going to have to go get somebody. They should. And I can only imagine the sports talk callers in New York right now, like, yelling for Trevor Bauer.
You know, he's serviceable. You know, he can help out a rotation.
Garrett Cole's old teammate. The two guys hate each other.
Tyler read my mind.
Bring that into the, you know.
By the way, Tyler read my mind. Paul Blackburn, who is in Oakland right now.
Hmm?
Why don't you just raid the ace? Good call, Tyler. Seriously, I was just pulling up his numbers. And that's a guy who, I mean, you know what? You realize that Alex Wood signed with the A's. Alex Wood.
Did I see that? Yeah, I don't remember that.
I don't remember that at all. I don't remember why. I don't remember hearing that.
Blackburn pitching in the dead of night.
Yeah, I mean, right now, you know who's having a good camp for the A's, by the way? Former Tiger Jack.
O'Loughlin.
Yeah, he's having a decent
Or O'Loughlin, right? Yeah, no, that's good for him. We thought that he would see time in the big leagues this year. That's a good spot for him. And he was solid last year, right? It was just, you know, we've talked about the pitching depth in the organization at the upper levels. It's a little bit easy to get lost there. So hopefully he gets in the big leagues and has some success.
Yeah, no, that's good for him. He was heading into look at his spring training numbers. I think I sent it to you the other day, Chris. It was just like that was
like one bad outing or one bad inning, basically. But yeah,
when I saw him pitch, he's a big dude. You would think he would throw harder, you know.
Yeah,
his velocity was just kind of middle of the road, but nice pitcher.
Yeah, he spun the ball pretty well and had starters arsenal and kind of, I don't know, he felt a little. He and Herter were vaguely similar to me. I thought Herter threw more strikes and had a little bit more bite on his slider, but. No, I think he'll pitch in the big leagues because it's the A's.
Good for him.
Yeah. He could be a six starter, what have you. So, no, but it's interesting. It was just good to check in with those kind of guys because especially with a guy like Spencer Watkins and former Tigers like that.
Warren Suffolk pitched in the big leagues a lot longer than I thought he would because I thought he wouldn't pitch in the big leagues.
So, Richard just reminded me of something that happened this week with Aroldis Chapman. He said Yankees signed Chapman, who had domestic abuse issues, thinks Bauer has lust issues. So Chapman this week was on an Instagram video grabbing his mother's breast.
I'm gonna need you, Rogelio, as the resident Cuban. You need to explain to me what this is. This a cultural thing? Is this?
You know what? Look. Us Hispanic people are very affectionate people. I love grabbing boobs.
That's called the Havana Hustle.
Listen. I love grabbing boobs just as much as the next guy does. Okay, yeah. Or whatever. We gotta have a drop for that. Yes, we do. We gotta have a drop for that. But that being said, we Hispanic people are very affectionate people. But I can safely say that I've never attempted to grab my mother's boob or my sister's boob ever. And we're joking people. No, it's no crime. They're just weird. Yes. It was Richard. Look, the whole thing was weird. But what was really weird was people just really overreacting about it on Twitter. It was weird. Let it be. But if it was anybody, I guarantee you, it was just the way his smile, yeah, Cubans don't make a lot of sense. We don't make a lot of sense. We don't. Like, look, I mean, as a half Cuban, there's a lot of things that don't make sense about me. See, my wife's even chiming in right now in the chat. She know, like,
you know, I don't know what those. You know,
I don't know what
that is. What is that down there?
Yeah, what is that emojis going right now? But
it's grimace. No, I was just joking around. I know some people, like a grown man who kisses his dad on the lips. Goodbye and hello and stuff like that, right? Like he's like, you know, over 40, and it's just something that they did in his family, and you know, whatever. Maybe in Roldis Chapman's family, he grew up kind of honking the horns.
Yes.
But,
wow.
But to back to the point, we've talked about it before. It's not necessarily even Trevor Bauer's legal issues that keep him out of clubhouses. It's he's just a personality that's not a great fit for a lot of teams. And as I mentioned, he and Garrett Cole hate each other. They were college teammates at UCLA. They do not get along at all. I don't think that would be a great mix there. But who knows? Somebody may get desperate at some point, but I don't see it.
Yeah, I don't see it either. I mean, he even like when he was doing that thing on Twitter where he puts a video where he was striking out against the, or he was striking out the Barstool guy. The Barstool guy almost got a hit off of him, I think. I mean, that was really pathetic. That was just weird. It's not as weird as this drone stuff, but Trevor Bauer is Aaron Rodgers with less talent. Yes, Deadly Ninja Bee, spot on. Spot on.
That's Vice President Rodgers to you. Ninja Bee.
I did kind of love the idea of the vice president playing NFL football on Sundays. Like,
what an asshole.
You got the Secret Service out there blocking for you.
Gunning down rushers.
Yeah.
No.
You went.
I could just see that right now.
Take out a Ndamukong Suh, even though he's not playing anymore.
Yeah. Somehow, yeah, he would. The entire like Secret Service like starts having like a coordinated block attack.
Yeah, it would. Yeah.
The Air Force One. They're gonna call it the Air Force One.
Yeah, what an asshole!
He's on the Jets. Yeah. I don't know. What a country.
What a country. What a weird week. Oh, really? I mean, what a weird week in general too. Even with like the Oscars that were Sunday. Usually we haven't had friend of the show Perry in a while. We have to bring him in at some point to talk movies.
Yeah, for sure. You know, I saw Oppenheimer this year, but that's about it. I didn't see that weird one with Emma Stone that actually looked kind of funny, but
she looks she's recruitedly naked the whole time, I believe.
The whole time, yeah. The Holdovers was a very good movie.
Is that the Paul Giamatti one?
Yeah, that was very entertaining. It was a fun movie. I enjoyed it.
Yeah, didn't you? I think you said your wife went to boarding school, and so you guys could relate to it. Yeah. Was it?
Yeah.
And that's is that Alexander Payne? Is that who did that?
Same guy who did Sideways with Giamatti. Yeah.
Oh, I love Sideways. Sideways is a great movie.
Oh, I loved it. Yeah. So cool.
One question before we leave out of here, which is, can Ryan Cross wants to know if Parker Meadows can hit 15 triples he plays all season?
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, I think so. I'm curious how many people have hit 15 triples overall in the bigs, and like he certainly has the speed and the right kind of swing to do that.
The right ballpark.
Yeah, it's that's like playing pinball though. Sometimes you just have to hit it. I remember we did our over under in the Discord last year, and I think the over under for was like Matt Vierling for 4.5 triples or 5 triples, and I think he got his 5th in like game 161. And he's arguably as fast as Parker Meadows, at least at sprint speed, and has the same kind of, he's more line drive swing. So it's just a matter, I guess, of the playing time and getting some luck. But I can't remember the last time, Granderson hit 20, 21, 22 that one year, but I can't remember the last time somebody hit 15.
Yeah, doesn't pop to mind either. I mean, he could do it. I mean, if the question is, can he do it? Sure, I think he could do it. But that's, maybe a 30% chance if he plays 145 more games. I don't know.
Yeah, I'm seeing leader in triples last year was Bobby Witt Jr. led baseball with 11 triples last year, and Corbin Carroll had 10. Ooh, so I think maybe 10 is a more realistic number to shoot for there.
Yeah.
I now realize that is triples gone is one of those stats where it's now like the way of the dinosaur where you don't see.
I think there's the certain level of moneyballism that has creeped into the game over the last 2 decades where it's not necessarily where guys don't like going for triples, but it's like, I'm going to score on a single from second anyway. Why risk it? They always say don't make the first or last out at third base. So you've basically got one out to work with. If there's one out, you can go to third base. Otherwise, don't do it. So, yeah.
The out is more valuable than the base.
You know what's funny is, there's even like, so Brandon Inge was top 10 in triples in 2005 with 9. Jose Reyes led the league in triples with 17 in 2005. Just to give you an example, I just wanted to go back like almost 20 years or so to see as far as it changed. Like 2004 league leaders in triples was Carl Crawford with 19.
Yeah.
You guys are going to laugh. Guess, there's two Tigers that are 6th and 7th on that list.
Oh, I know one.
All right, go ahead.
Castellanos.
Wrong. This is 2004. This is 2004.
Oh, Nick Logan?
Oh.
No.
2004, Carlos Guillen.
Yeah, he was sixth in triples with 10, and then there's another Tiger right after him with 9.
2004.
The Carlos Guillen one, I got to confess, I was shocked because I didn't think he had that much speed.
I think Carlos had a couple 2020 seasons, did he? Shane Halter. I don't know. Was he still in 2004?
Omar Infante.
Omar. Okay. Yeah. See that.
Yeah.
I'm looking.
And,
didn't Castellanos, though, he led the AL in triples 1 year, didn't he?
I know that may have. I know he was close in doubles. He maybe could have been like 2020. No, he would have been out of the Tigers by then. I don't know. I bet you he did. I'm looking. I see right now there have been 14, 15 triple seasons since 2000. Angel Pagan, Dexter Fowler, Carl Crawford, Jose Reyes, Shane Victorino, Carl Crawford, Jose Reyes, Sean Figgins, Jose Reyes, Carl Crawford, Jimmy Rollins, Christian Guzman, and Curtis Granderson. So, one way we can check is Baseball Reference, right? They will give us the bolded league leaders.
Yes.
But so while you're doing that,
Kenny Allen just got traded to the Bears. So okay. Go ahead, Uber.
Okay, let's talk about the arc of this season and how this team is built quick. Let's say, for sake of argument, the offense isn't a whole lot better than last year, maybe 5% better. Instead of the 28th in runs, they're 23rd in runs. Okay? How good does the pitching have to be to sustain that level of offense and push toward a playoff spot? Because certainly we've seen teams in the past that are pitching dependent or their offense dependent. Not every team is balanced, right? How good would this pitching staff have to be to carry this current offense to a playoff spot?
I mean, I would think probably top three in the AL, honestly. Yeah. You're talking Skubal that has that Cy Young season and Maeda. And you probably would say that Flaherty gets back to that form that made him a Cy Young. He came in third 1 year. Mm-hmm. So you're talking like a 6-win season from Skubal and like a 4-win season from Flaherty, and then Maeda and the Olsen, Manning, Mize, all those guys are 2-3. I think you get close to 25 WAR from your pitching staff. I don't know mm-hmm. if that's enough to put you at top three or not, but yeah, they would have to have a spectacular season to kind of carry this offense if it doesn't.
I was thinking done. Top five, but you might be right. Top three. I don't know. What do you think, Raj?
I still think I think the Tigers really need to have a top three staff in order to get it over to really win the division. Honestly, it really, really, really has to be a situation where everything they stay healthy and the guys who are in the minors can step up, can do that and be a thing. That's to me, it has to be a perfect storm of things. I just don't think they have enough offense to, or they really need the pitching to be flawless, in order for that to happen. And you also got to consider too, Minnesota's got some bats in there. I mean, they did lose a little bit, but Minnesota, we can't forget Minnesota. If for whatever reason, Minnesota, the Twins are one of those teams that play the Tigers extremely tough. It doesn't matter what decade it doesn't matter. It seems like a thing. And that, take the talent side portion of it aside for a moment. It is a team that does have a better offense than the Tigers on paper. I mean, if Brian Buxton is healthy, Brian Buxton, to me, at least to me, is at one. I mean, you can consider him an AL MVP type player. When he's healthy, he's damn good. He's damn good. And that right there alone, I mean, that there alone, but they have some pop to him. So I don't know. I just don't. It has to be a flaw. Like just to have to really get some good luck on that for that to happen.
I'm trying to look last year to see, you know, if there was an equivalent team like that. And I think 25 WAR was probably too high for. I'm looking last year. There were only three teams, according to Fangraphs, that had 20 WAR. Tampa was at 20.6. Seattle at 20. Minnesota 19.7. So, but they all had better offenses. Than the Tigers. So I do think it might take the top pitching performance in baseball to boost a, you know, 12.
And I was trying to be conservative by saying that they would only go from 28th to 23rd in runs. They might do better than that. I mean, if they get 145 games from Riley Green or more, and, you know, Torkelson takes even a small step ahead, and Cole Keith is, you know, a solid enough player to contribute, they should score some more runs. I want to be conservative until we see it, though. You know?
So I'm looking. I think the highest or the lowest runs total for a playoff team last year, Milwaukee made the playoffs, right?
Yes.
They were 17th in runs scored at 728. The Tigers were 28th at 661. So I don't think any of these other teams made it. The Yankees didn't make the playoffs, did they?
So they need to add about 80 runs, six something?
Yeah. Half a run a game. To that point, let's see where the Brewers finished in pitching last year. 12th, 16 more. So I don't know. Guess it depends. Partially depends on the division. But, that's a good question. And Yoop, you are correct. In 2017, Nick Castellanos led the American League with 10 triples.
Oh, there you go.
10 triples. Okay.
The triples king, Nicky C.
That's right.
All right. So for everybody who didn't join us live on the broadcast, leave a comment below your inside number for the week, and I will pick a winner by Sunday. So anybody who's watching this afterwards, you see this bobblehead right here? Well, don't look at the price because it's not, anyway, it doesn't matter. It's a Miguel Cabrera. Maybe no one's excited enough about the World Baseball Classic Miguel Cabrera. Or
pretty cool.
Or actually, I have this one too, but I really rather keep this.
Is it Paws?
It's Paws wearing a University of Michigan jersey.
Oh, Paws was a good one.
Yeah.
Very cool.
So, well, actually, you know what? Next week will be the last show. Well, actually, we'll be doing our predictions coming up here shortly. So we're going to do our season predictions. We did those last year, and then we're a month ahead. So I think the Tigers are opening when? They're 28th, I want to say?
28th, yep.
All right, so next week we'll be doing our predictions. Wins, totals, all that.
At some point we got to go back to the year before and look at how we did. Every year we go, yeah, got to do that, and then we never do.
No, we did last year.
Did we? I don't remember. Yeah. Okay.
We did last year because remember, okay, so I have it. Okay, so I remember I pulled this up. So I do have it. If anybody's curious, I thought the show was going to wrap up, but
we sorry about that.
No, it's okay. No. So we have this. Okay, so we do have this from...
All right, let's see here. So I thought I picked Corey Seager to win MVP. That's the only one I remember because I think it's the closest one that came, the closest to coming true.
Okay. So the
rookies of the year too. Those
were we had over unders. So Green home runs was 14.5. Baez K percentage was 27.
All right. So yeah, that was the over unders we did in the Discord. Was Torque average 240 or under?
So. So his division predictions. Had the Rays win the division, Astros, Twins. Okay, so and then in the AL he had Braves, Cardinals, Dodgers. Ooh. Wild card, Guardians, Blue Jays, Mariners, and the NL Mets, Padres, Brewers.
Not bad. The Mets, yeah. The Mets fell apart. Mets and Cardinals fell apart, but otherwise that was pretty darn good.
I don't have yours. I don't know why I happened to yours.
I might not have done them, knowing me.
Was last year the year I had the Tigers at like 62 wins and they really blew that away?
Oh, by the way, here's another one too. Erod wins 8.5. Boyd K's 105.5. Wow, we're generous there. Lorenzen starts 20.5. Turnbull ERA 3.75. Mason Engler games 40.5. Lang saves 18.5. Players with 2+ WAR 3.5.
Yeah, I have the spreadsheet. We kept all those. We ended up having about 20 people give us their guesses, and all right. I think I want to say Yoop came in second or tied for first. Where do I have that? I have it here somewhere, but Discord over over under. I kept track.
Okay.
Ben K and Brandon Day both had got 9 right. Yoop and Alex Kotas had 8. And Rahelio, you and I had 7 along with about 5 other people.
Okay.
Including John.
Yeah. All right. Well, okay. So we'll have to do that again. We'll share for everybody for next week. Next week, over-unders, season predictions. We'll leave them in the chat. So everybody, if you got some homework to do this weekend or next week, bring them. Tyler, Stan, everybody, thank you. Richard, by the way, Richard wants to know real quick, which one of you is going to pick Cole Keefe over Jackson Holley for Rookie of the Year? I love Cole Keefe, but Jackson Holley's really good, man.
Yeah.
I can't be that homer. I can't be that homer, man. I can't. I mean, as much as I want to be, I can't. It's just,
I mean, you know. The only thing that would, I mean, if they keep Jackson Holliday in the minors, but I don't know. As you said, it sounds like they're going to make him their starting second baseman. I don't know. They have so many good young infielders, it's kind of tough to figure out how they're going to do that. But be a fun problem to have.
Yeah,
it would be a fun problem. So thanks so much for everybody for tuning in this evening. But as far as it goes, like, I'm trying to think. I lost my train of thought. What were we going with this just now?
That's nowhere. Rookie of the year.
Rookie of the year. Oh, yeah.
Wrapping it up.
Oh, yeah. I'm going to go with Jackson Holliday. Also, don't forget, just to do a quick plug. Please support the minor leagues. So Toledo's got a new hat. West Michigan's got a new hat. The Erie Seawolves have a new hat. Go check out the merch. The Mud Hens season opener is going to be Friday, March 29th. We'll be out there for that opening day as they kick off the season. But please, if you were interested, please support your minor league caps. Get the collection, or in this case, this is a Montgomery Rebels hat from the Double A Trammell and Whitaker. I think it was 76 when they won the Southern League Championship. So for myself and Chris, we'll see you guys next week. Have a good week, everybody.
See ya.